Chapter 22. Ephraim. Unshorn. I wake in a large four-poster. Light seeps through pale blue curtains. How long have I been out? There's an IV pumping saline into me. My stomach rumbles as I pull it out. The itch of the Zolodone hunger has morphed from rabies-infected rage beast to small dog. It pisses in the corner and squeaks out a bark. I ignore it for now. Kid visited, didn't he? Has my ring. Has Trig's story. That uppity brat. Gods! My head aches. Right leg itches too, like it's made of Venusian acid ants. I toss off the blankets to reveal my legs. The artificial muscles and sinew are now covered by a new growth of pale skin that mismatches with my darker left leg. It's fancy tech, well muscled already. Puckered pink flesh makes a knot on my mid-torso where Gorgo's rail slug passed through the Duke of Hands and then into me. More pink flesh makes a finger-long ridgeline on my forearm where it broke in the crash. I peek under my medical shorts. Hello, old boy. Glad you're still around. I wiggle the toes. Nerves are already calibrated. No phantom pain, except a weird ache in my chest. Only get work this good if you got the patronage of a rich house. But I ain't rich. I ain't a crusader. So, qui solvente? Who's paying? Where's Volga? Where am I? I push open the curtains. The suite is expansive and fit for a brooding but secretly sensitive knight from a holocan drama. Stone walls and floor, expensive rugs, a hearth fit to dance in. A pair of fuzzy pink slippers sit by the bedside, along with an Arctic bear cloak. Someone thinks they're hilarious. I slip both on and go to a wooden door punctured by beams of sunlight. I'm blinded as I push it open. A wash of cool air whips in. I wrap the coat tighter and step out onto the terrace. Covered with spots of snow and topiaries, an expanse of stone pushes to a low stone balustrade, covered thick with flowering vines of green and silver. Beyond that is a sight to see. In the first year of the Battle of Luna, my boys and I were hunting some gold gladiator impresario when the building adjacent to ours was struck by a termite munition. When the dust cleared, a gold woman stood in the ruins of her block empire, an arm missing from the elbow down, body fleeced of skin and all the blueprints underneath vivid as traffic arteries. She swayed there, tilting her chin upward at us, as if to say, "Witness my glory, peasants." She bled out instead of accepting our help. The ruins of the Martian city of Olympia remind me of that woman. Beautiful, regal, tough as a bare-fisted brawler, and pissed at the world for breaking her perfect nose. I watched on Luna as a Minotaur made his stand here against Sephi, holding out until the Reaper himself came with the bloody seventh to wreak a path of hell all the way to the seat of Bellona and send the Minotaur scurrying like a kicked puppy. What a sight. What a city. But while the war moved on, Olympia didn't. I know her cloud towers fell to become squatter havens west of the city. I can see their humps in the distance. The rest of the old Bellona capital spills against the northwestern lip of the Olympus Mons and shimmies toward Loch Esmeralda in an hourglass shape. Each war-battered kilometre reflecting the architecture of 6 centuries of stately Bellona taste, and it is a fine taste, despite her broken skyline. Only fascists should make cities. Democrats never have a salient thesis. Her air traffic is sparse. Cooking fires twirl from broken buildings, Land traffic congests the northern gates. Markets, overgrown grottos, and old statue parks are filled with bonfires and vagrant tents. People live here, but not well. I turn back toward my room and look up in awe. Eagle Rest, citadel of the fallen Bologna, yawns up the tallest mountain in the solar system. Libraries, government buildings, dancing halls and villas ascend the winter mountain, held up by the wings of a dilapidated stone eagle. What the hell is going on? Why am I here? The old senses are triggered, and I feel someone inside my room. He's not trying to hide. I just didn't see him at first. I thought he was a sofa. One of the biggest men I've ever seen lies on a beast skin in front of my fire, roasting walnuts in the coals with his bare hands. If you can call those hands. The right one is huge and twisted like ginger roots.
Do you see your fate in the bones, Grania?
He asks in a low, sibilant voice. He's bald, black-skinned, like many tribes of Mars's North Pole, and incredibly fat. His eyes focus on the coals. I glance to the ajar door.
A man may run, but none has escaped his fate. Yet.
Who are you? I ask. His eyes scour the room.
I see his fate. A young eagle's nest was this. To plume his feathers he went away and met the man around whom all fray. Now he lies in memory's cavern, head a blossom, heart judged by Saturn, on a cold stone floor. He found an early autumn.
He breaks a piping hot walnut shell with his fingers and slurps out the meat as if sucking down an oyster. He's a living tattoo. Bright blue runes swirl across his face, down his bare arms in interlocking patterns. 7 ridiculous rings weigh down the fingers of his left hand with rubies and diamonds. There's nothing left of his ears except keloid-rimmed holes in his head. But what he lacks there, he compensates for with arcane eyebrows, thick enough for dung beetles to disappear behind. Greased leather bags litter a scarlet scale belt underneath a glossy cloak of raven feathers. A shaman. I would see the freaks on occasion in the block wars, charging naked and high on God's bread toward the enemy, with their engorged pricks out like a lance. They were always surrounded by insane spirit warriors called Skoogie. As important to the warbands as the legendary eagle is for a legion, maybe more so. After all, greys don't believe in magic. If he's here, Skoogie will be outside that door. My prey instinct shrieks inside me. In full kit, I'd take the window, but I'm wearing slippers and bear fur, so I sit beside him as he gestures. I'm smaller next to his mass than a 9-year-old grey is to me.
Your fate not in these bones, Grania?
He gestures toward the coals. There's bones amongst them. Marrow seeps out of fissures as they heat and crack. Human bones. Is that an eye socket? I swallow. They hiss.
The men that came for you,
he says. Syndicate? He nods.
Rice on your head so big they lost theirs.
He chuckles.
Freyhild and the Skoogie castrated them, and once they spoke their truths, fed them to the Sky Queens to make them strong. They had much fun.
Marrow bubbles and trickles down what looks like a femur. The shaman leans toward it, so close his eyebrows begin to curl.
I have seen your fate in bones, Grania. Sometimes God speak, but you never know which one. Some play more tricks than others.
Name's Ephraim, old boy. The eyes slide in his huge head to look sideways at me. He chuckles again.
Shh! He comes. He likes fear. Show none. Perhaps his wrath will not come undone.
Who? He submerges his whole left hand in the coals, reaching around as if rummaging through a backpack, and pulls out a steaming walnut. This he rips open and shows me the bronzed meat.
Unshorn.
I stand up in sudden panic, almost losing my balance on the untested new leg. It's got some thrust.
Valdir the Unshorn? Be wise, Grannir. The Queen's concubine has much power. Little leash.
I look for somewhere to hide. I hear boots, heavy fucking boots. The candles on the wall shiver. A shadow moves in the hall outside the door. Talk rings make an unholy clatter, each taken and melted from the sigils of a fallen gold. They don't even bother with greys.
Silly man, your destiny is not out the window,
the shaman says without looking up.
But find out for yourself if you must.
I glance down at him. No way he's fast enough to stop me. Nice to meet you, Mr. Shaman. I run out the terrace, my gait uneven on the new leg, my fur coat streaming behind me, and hurl myself over the balustrade. I grab two handfuls of vine and feel them sag under my weight. My feet dangle over a kilometre drop down the snowy cliffs. People always make such drama of heights, still haven't met one worse than the Unshorn. I climb down the sheer face of the parapet. High-altitude wind nips at me. My hands are already going numb. The vines are beginning to fray. A thick stone support column upholds this section of the castle. It too is covered with vines. I shimmy to the right and plant both feet on the stone and shove off, trusting the acrobatics that helped me become a legend of the underworld. Ephraim the reptile. Ephraim the climber. Ephraim the... Oh, shit! I fly straight past the column. My right leg is a freak. When I pushed off, it didn't push. It shot me like a bloody ballista. Three times as strong as the old one ever was. 2 comma tech. Maybe even 3. I'm going to sail out into nothing. I slam into solid stone. Another column. Ah, that hurts. Fingers scramble on burst stone for a grip as I bounce off. I snag one as I fall. The vine begins to unravel. I plummet down. Breath stuck in my chest until I come to an abrupt halt. Skin tears off the palm, but I hold on to the vine for dear life. My slippers drift off into the expanse below. Oh, blight my balls. I've fallen past safe harbour, at the extreme west of the network of support columns. There's nothing beneath but jagged cliffs and twirling snow. My only salvation is to the left, toward the western edge of the foundation of Eagle Rest. It's more than 20 meters away, not far enough down. I rock myself toward it. The vine sags. Keep at it. Better than unshorn. I swing in a parabolic arc, not close enough yet. The vine begins to fray. Hold on, vine. I rock back into nothingness, sagging a little. Rock back toward the eagle wing, reach the zenith of my parabolic arc, and let go the vine. Gravity tugs. I fly feet forward, body perfectly horizontal, and then jerk my shoulders back, pull my knees up, twirling into a flip. Stick it, stick it, stick it. Jarring force shoots from my heels into the knees as I land barefoot on the stone. Ha-ha! Then I slip on a patch of ice and twist sideways, just before a fall that would mean certain death. I scramble to safety, blooded, freezing and cackling. I glare at the drop and spit. Now, time to descend the cliff face, get to the city, get some shoes, a ship, and get out of Dodge. Do I know anyone in Olympia? Hope not. Syndicate will have a price on my head. Then I hear something in the wind. I look up at the sky. Nothing. I can't even tell which parapet was mine. I'm so far down. No one pursues. See my fate in your bones now, shaman. Then the wind wails behind me. I turn around to face the city, cupping my eyes against the sun. It winks off the distant loch. Must have been, oh, Jove, on high. 6 monsters rise from beneath the edge of the stone eagle wing. Pale blue feathers, wingspans of 20 meters. Huge birds of prey with bodies of feathered lions wrapped in rune-laden pulse armor. Griffins. I run, because what else do you do? A missile of fur, feather and muscle hits the stone in front of me. I sprawl backward from amidst a cloud of spitting snow. The biggest damn thing I've ever seen uncoils her white mass. I've seen the monster once before as it devoured Euripides' Ovotum atop the dome of Endymion. It is God-eater, the albino steed of the Obsidian Queen. But no one rides in its saddle. The griffin's razor-scarred beak is the size of me. It opens to scream into my face as a mountain of a man lands in its shadow. My cilia wail. The man's armored boots are big, his tattooed arms like tree saplings and ringed with gold torques. His helmet is 3 times the size of a human head, made from the skull of an African sand hydra and plumed with green meter-long poison feathers of a Pacific archipelago jungle dragon. His pulse armor is battered and white, shoulders set with the skulls of the peerless warlords he killed with the man-sized great axe strapped to his back. The Reaper's greatest armored cavalry commander stomps toward me. The long valor tail of hair from which he gets his name falls down his back to his tailbone, sewn with trophies. I pick myself to my feet. To his people, he is big brother. To Goals, the sky bastard. To everyone else, Valdir the unshorn. Warlord and royal concubine of Sephi the Quiet. Well, this isn't where I park my ship, I say up at him. Black eyes within the hollows of the Hydra's skull flick toward the mountain face and stone columns where I made my passage. Have you seen it? Shiny, long, 2 swollen engines at the stern, plenty of thrust. No reply. Listen. I was working with the Sovereign, your ally. Give her a call. I ain't saying I haven't made mistakes. Just don't give me to Barker. I ain't earned that. Now he looks back at me. Earned? The voice filters through the sonic chamber of the Hydra, each decibel contorted. Well, I mean, I did go face down the whole syndicate. Ask the kids. Either of them. I was pretty impressive. In the land of my mothers, those who steal children declare Ashvar, a holy war against the spirit of tribe, so their covetors, Yontak, are shorn from their bodies and cast into the fire, so their seed may not spread, but crackle pleasantly and share warmth with tribe. Children peck their eyes from their skulls with crow bones, so the no-men shall be at the mercy of the tribe from which they sought to steal. This is what you have earned. Crowbones, crowbones. Well, that sounds insidious. Lucky for me, we're in Republic territory. If you would just call the Sov... He shoots me point blank in the chest with a tacnet. It knocks the wind out of me and contracts. He drags the line to God-Eater's saddle and barks at the griffin. Riderless, it springs off the stone wing and into the winter air. Valdir flies beside it on grav boots, keening a savage song. I'm dragged beneath as we climb back to Eagle Rest, pissed beyond all belief. Last place I want to die is Mars.